Kapila uvacha.
Kapila uvacha.
Lord Kapila said.
Lord Kapila said.
Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus.
Kritamati.
Kritamati.
Desiring.
Desiring.
Garbhe.
Garbhe.
In the womb.
Dasamasyaha.
10 months old. Stuvan. Extolling. Rishi. The living entity. Sadyaha. At that very time. Chipati. Propels. Avachinam. Turned downward. Prasutyai. For birth. Suti Marutaha. The wind for childbirth. Lord Kapila continued. The 10-month-old living entity has these desires even while in the womb. But while he thus extols the Lord, the wind that helps parturition propels him forth with his face turned downward so that he may be born. Text number 23. Tena vasrishta sahasa krivavak shira aturaha vinishkra matti kritsrena niruch chvaso hatas mittihi. Pushed downward. All of a sudden, by the wind, the child comes out with great trouble, head downward, breathless and deprived of memory due to severe agony. Purport. The word kritsrena means with great difficulty. When the child comes out of the abdomen through the narrow passage due to pressure, when the child comes out of the abdomen through the narrow passage due to pressure there, the breathing system completely stops. And due to agony, the child loses his memory. You remember that? It's true. It's true. Sometimes the trouble is so severe that the child comes out dead or almost dead. One can imagine what the pangs of birth are like. The child remains for 10 months in that horrible condition within the abdomen, and at the end of 10 months he is forcibly pushed out. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord points out that a person who is serious about advancement in spiritual consciousness should always consider the 4 pangs of birth, death, disease, and old age. The materialist advances in many ways, but he is unable to adopt these four principles of suffering inherent in material existence. I'll read on. Patito bhuvyasmin misraha vishtabur iva cheshtate roruyati gate jnane viparitam gatim gataha. The child thus falls on the ground, smeared with stool and blood, and plays just like a worm germinated from the stool. He loses his superior knowledge and cries under the spell of Maya. Okay, so next verse is text 25. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnanjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yad Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guru Dinatarinam. So, it's easy to come away with a very pessimistic view of life reading these passages of the Bhagavatam, and there's a good reason for that. There's this idea that is prominent, and that is that life is meant to be enjoyed, right? Life is meant to have fun. But most of the time life is a struggle for existence. Right? And Prabhupada emphasizes this word here, krichtrina. Krichtrina. With great difficulty. And almost anything that is worthwhile requires some effort, even from the spiritual, especially from the spiritual point of view. So, in the previous section, or it's mentioned before the child is born, the living entity, the fortunate living entity, starts to pray to the Lord and as a result of the constriction, the restrictions, and the suffocation, the discomfort that the living entity feels within the womb of the mother. Yeah, turn it up a little bit. I can't even hear myself. then the living entity prays. And those prayers come as a result of realization. You know, there's the jnana and vijnana. There's knowledge, which is theoretical, and there's knowledge which is realized. Right? And even though there's great discomfort and difficulty, struggle, that struggle has a benefit. Yeah, none of us like to struggle or to face difficult circumstances or situations. But out of these difficulties comes realization, jnana and vijnana. That the difficulties that the living entity experiences in the womb of the mother stimulate self-realization, and basically it's the foundation is suffering. The material world is a place of suffering, and whilst it is not uncommon for that suffering and difficulty to give rise to cynicism and disillusionment. For the fortunate living entity, that suffering gives rise to spiritual inspiration. Prabhupada mentions the weight of our karma after lifetime of that cycle of birth and brahmanda bhumite kuna bhagyavana jeev. One's considered to be fortunate. That suffering is actually the impetus for getting out of the material world, because the desire to enjoy is natural. The desire to have a good time is natural, because that comes from Krishna. But we're looking for that enjoyment, that spiritual enjoyment. We're looking for it in the wrong place. Prabhupada gives us an example. What's the example that Prabhupada gives of the mirage, right, in the desert? If you don't see it. Well, I haven't seen it that much in Victoria as a mirage. But in South Australia, if you drive in far north South Australia, it's not uncommon to see, when you're driving, you see a mirage on the road. Right? Have you seen a mirage in driving in Victoria? No. I see it very often. But in outback South Australia, on the in the Flinders Ranges especially, where there's long hills but on a gradual gradient, then you can see the looks like water on the road, right? And as you drive towards it, you look like you're getting closer, and then all of a sudden it just disappears, right? So in the material world, there's this appearance, this apparition of enjoyment. And it looks like we can enjoy. But as we approach it, it just disappears. Right? Or it gives rise to further suffering. Right? It gives rise to suffering. You work hard, you get your pay. Right? And we were discussing this the other day. You get some money. Work hard and you get some money and think, oh, fantastic, I've made it. Right? But then the money just disappears. Right? It gets taken away from us. We work hard to get it, But then there's somebody else working just as hard or even harder to take it away from us. So we're exhilarated when we see money go into our bank account, but then we become depressed as it gradually disappears. Right? Have to pay the rent, have to pay the gas, have to pay the electricity. Rent or mortgage? Huh?
Mobile phone.
Data. Data allowance. Right? Don't exceed your data allowance. What they give you for $10, they'll now charge you $100. Huh? So anyway, we work hard. We feel some exhilaration. But then all of that struggle is for nothing. It all gets taken away. So there's this apparition. There's this vision of enjoyment. But in the material world, it's very easy to come to the to become frustrated, right? Frustrated and angry because I worked hard, I got what I thought would make me happy, but all it ended up in was frustration and misery. Right? So the tendency might be then to think, you can't enjoy anywhere. Everything is hopeless. Right? Nihilism. And Prabhupada makes a point. This is the material world is in that sense false, because all of our aspirations and all of the things that we strive for, we get them. We experience some satisfaction from enjoying those things, but then it's all gone, it's all taken away. Huh? And so then the realization that comes from that, everything in the material world is false. Huh? Because it's temporary. I have it for some period of time, but then it just dissolves. Or it's like sand, it just runs through my fingers and I can't hold it. Right? And so, there's this tendency to think of the material world as being an illusion. And it is an illusion. It is. It's illusory. Because of this coming and going, this ebb and flow. But whilst it is illusory, it's still real. It still exists. It has substance. It has potency, power. We can see it here. The material energy is extremely powerful. In the womb of the mother, the child is praying, Krishna, please don't let me fall into Maya again. When I get out of here, I'm going to become a pure devotee. Huh? And this happens periodically in the material world. We experience some extreme suffering. And so then we turn inwardly. We become introspective. And then we pray. Krishna, please help me. But this is an example of how, okay, it's illusory in that the forms that it creates are temporary. Nothing exists, but at the same time, it bewilders us. On occasion, we feel, yes, I'm going to become a pure devotee. But then the next day, what happens? We get distracted. What? We get distracted. Material energy is designed to distract us. But then what happens? We suffer some more. Huh? We're pretty stupid, aren't we? How powerful the material energy is, that it bewilders us into thinking, yes, I can enjoy. Especially for a devotee, actually, because when a devotee chants Hare Krishna and we follow the process of bhakti, then it dissolves the material illusion, the material attraction or attachment, connection. And so then one feels relief. But when after feeling relief, then what happens is the living entity then thinks, oh, actually, maybe I can enjoy. Maybe I can have a go at this. I could be successful. And again, we get caught by it. So it is real. The material energy is real. The forms that it creates are not. But the energy itself is real. We pinch yourself. You're here, right? Oh, yeah, I'm here. I can feel it. So, but the forms that it creates are like this mirage. It appears, and then it disappears. But because enjoyment in the or happiness is not readily obtainable in the material world, doesn't mean that it's not obtainable anywhere. This is the point. There is a purpose. Material existence has a purpose. The purpose of the material world is for us to re-establish our relationship with Krishna. That's the sadhya. That's the goal. So there is a purpose. And that the material energy pinches us is to remind us of it's actually for our benefit, is to remind us that yes, the purpose of life is to enjoy, but we shouldn't be looking for that enjoyment in the wrong place, because in this particular place, it'll just lead to suffering. Adyantavanta kuntaya na te shu ramate buddha. Yehi samspasa ja boga dukkha yonaya eva te. Right? So, enjoying with the material senses is the source of unhappiness. Dukkha yonaya. Right? Dukkha means unhappiness. Yonaya means the source of the womb, isn't it? Right? That's where we come from. That's what this is talking about. We're coming out of the womb of our mother. Kritrena. With great difficulty, and as Prabhupada mentions here, we forget the pain of childbirth is so severe that we forget that only a few moments before we're thinking internally, inwardly, and praying. My dear Lord, please don't let me do this again. Which is and it shows this is it's a mood, you know, this surrender, because that's a symptom of surrender, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings about dainya, submission or humility. Supplication these are words coming from Latin. Supplication, which means offering oneself in a mood of surrender. So that in the womb, and we see it even now, we do, speaking for myself, one day I'm a supplicant. The next day I'm an enjoyer, right? Then I get smashed again. Then I remember, oh, hang on, I'm supposed to be a devotee. Where did that mood of enjoyment come from? It's natural. To anandamaya abhyasat, Prabhupada quotes this aphorism, Vedic aphorism. Krishna is a pleasure seeker. And because we are part and parcel of Krishna, mama evamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatnaha, we're a small part and parcel of Krishna. He's an enjoyer, so that's why we're enjoyers also. But Krishna knows how to enjoy. He knows where to enjoy. Right? Even though Krishna appears in the material world, he actually is never of the material world. Right? The material world, it comes from Krishna. It's a reflection of the spiritual realm. But with severe caveats. Right, with severe restrictions. It appears like you can enjoy it, but you can't. Just like when you look in the mirror, right? When you look in the mirror, it looks like you, right? Looks like us, but it's not us, right? Try to have a relationship with your image in the mirror, right? You touch it, it's just cold glass. Huh? Mm-hmm. Looks like you, but it's not you at all. Huh? So, the material energy has this bewildering potency, power, to make us think that it's real and that it can be enjoyed. But that's simply because it's a reflection of the spiritual. It's a perverted reflection of the spiritual realm. And so when Krishna appears in the material world, he's not actually enjoying the material world. His pastimes are all facilitated by his different shaktis, right? Primarily Hladini Shakti, he's enjoying. Potency or the energy by which he enjoys, but it's not part of the material world. So even though Krishna appears in the material world, he's not actually in the material world. Wherever he goes, there's a verse that Prabhupada quotes, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So he brings Vrindavan with him. Right? So we have to develop that same mood or that same we have to cultivate that mood of supplication or surrender, humility. It's manifest in humility. Learning, great learning is manifest in humility, because one realizes the reality of material existence, and that happiness is not to be pursued. There may be some happiness, but it's mixed with distress. That's the nature of the material world. Right? So therefore, Krishna recommends, sukhe dukhe same kritva. We have to be equipoised in happiness and distress, because that's the nature of material existence. One day we're up, woo-hoo, the next day we're down. Right? This is how it goes. And take advantage, be wary of the enjoying of the sukha, because it's illusory, right? And take advantage of the dukkha. Okay, let's get serious, right? Because the tendency is be elated, oh, yoo-hoo, we can have a good time, right? Even the devotees do it. We go on Harinam, we feel the ananda of Sankirtan, right? Harinam Ananda. But then we have such a good time, we think, oh, actually, it is possible to enjoy here. But yes, it is possible, but through that spiritual experience. That's the real enjoyment, right? But somehow we forget that. Material energy is so powerful. In the womb of the mother, we're praying, oh, my Krishna, please help me. But then we're released from the suffering. We think, oh, great. Let's go. But we go in the wrong direction. We think. So even the enjoyment is, the spiritualist is wary of material enjoyment and material facility and so forth. It can actually be an obstacle. The process of devotional service can actually, I mentioned this before, can actually give rise to difficulties in spiritual practice. Because even a devotee will be given facility. Because of that enjoying propensity, then those facilities, if not utilized properly for Krishna and for devotional service, then one can subtly enjoy those, or even grossly enjoy those things. And then again be back in the material, so that back in the material consciousness. So Brahminical culture actually embraces tapasya, right? Some austerity. This is a mode of goodness. In recognition of this fact that, or this reality, that mood of service should be maintained all of the time. So there's a equanimity, a sense of detachment. Learning means detachment. And this is why learning is revered and valued, worshipped in the Vedic culture, spiritual culture, because in modern society you're considered successful if you can pay all of your bills, right? And maintain your family. This is the standard of excellence in Kali Yuga, right? And if you're very wealthy, then it's like you're worshipped almost, right? If you've got lots of money and influence and power, you're worshipped. Oh, what a great man, right? But that's foolish, because all of the great men end up what? Food for worms. Explains in the Bhagavad Gita. Food for worms. Or ashes. Dust. Huh? Even in the Christian tradition. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. So in the Vedic culture, more valuable, the greatest wealth, is to have knowledge. Right? And understand this flickering material existence, and how, yes, one day you're a great man, the next day you're dead, huh? And that's the way of all great men, as Prabhupada says. Where's Napoleon now, huh? Where's Winston Churchill? Great men, apparently great men. Where are the great men? Mahatma Gandhi. Huh? Shot, yes. Mahatma Gandhi thought, here's a good example from Prabhupada. Mahatma Gandhi thought, I'll be happy when we get rid of the British. Huh? Prabhupada tells the story. But then when he was successful, right? This was his great goal, right? But then when he was successful, how did he feel? He was miserable. He was very unhappy. Because of, so many people were killed as a result of partition, right? He was lamenting. Prabhupada tells the story. He was lamenting, and then the next day he was shot by his own countrymen. Right? The people that he worked for, sacrificed so much for, they shot him. So where are the great men? The great men and women, they're all gone. And so in recognition of this fact, the brahminical jnana and vijnana, there's a realization, there's theoretical knowledge is good, but what we have to have is an understanding, practical understanding of how to apply that learning. And so the endeavors for in life that are encouraged by the brahminical culture or the Vedic, what we might call the Vedic culture, is to not work so hard for material possessions, for wealth, influence, all of these things. And Lord Chaitanya prays, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, right? I'm not interested in wealth, followers, the enjoyment of being with the in crowd, beautiful people, because those things will come and go. They'll come and go. Even for a devotee, they'll come and go. But more important is cultivate some of the principles of goodness, actually. And that means learning. Samo damas tapa socham. Being equipoised, equal to everybody. This is the basis of spiritual realization, is to see everybody equally. Right? And to identify with everybody as my family, basically. This is the vision of a transcendentalist. Not, as Prabhupada says, this my own manship. Right? My own manship. And this family connections. This doesn't mean that we ignore our families. We should have affection for our families. But at the same time, not be overly attached to sense gratification in that family situation. But Prabhupada says so much trouble is created in the material world because, you know, on one occasion or prior to marriage, we're supposed to be equal to everybody. Then we get married, we meet a girl or a boy, and then all of a sudden there's this big strong connection. Somebody you had no connection with the day before, you get married and boom, and there's this big knot, right? Then we have children and so forth, and then we're overly affectionate and attached to our children, and then we ignore everybody else. And then Prabhupada tells the story of how, you know, if your wife or your children come and steal your money, you laugh. Say, oh, how nice, right? But if somebody else comes along and takes your money, you fight them, right? There'll be a big fight. So why is that? It's because of this family, this knot of material affection, basically. Whereas from the spiritual perspective, the affection should be equal with everybody because we're all actually connected. We're all part of the same spiritual family. We're all part and parcel of Krishna. So that equanimity, seeing everybody equally, that's spiritual advancement, mode of goodness. Samo damas, dama means sense control. Tapa, austerity. Socham, cleanliness. Cleanliness, very important. It's the basis of what we do in a temple. When we're chanting Hare Krishna, what are we doing? Cheto dapranam marjanam, right? Cleaning the heart. And part of cleaning the heart is keeping the temple clean as well. Very important. This is our culture. Our culture is cleaning, isn't it? Who likes cleaning? Hands up, who likes cleaning? I'm not convinced. Especially the brahmacharis. I reckon we should have a brahmachari ashram clean up. If I went to the brahmacharini ashrams, I'd probably be just as shocked. Cleaning. But cleaning is so important. And I've told this story so many times. But you know, Karo Harir Mandira Majanadishu. What did Ambarish Maharaj do when he went to the temple? He went to the temple, Marjanadishu. The first thing he did was clean. Right? He's the emperor of the whole universe, a big man by any estimation, right? But what is Ambarish Maharaj recognized for? What's his qualification? What's the quality that he is the symbol of? Yeah, but no, there's 9 items of devotional service. Which one does he exemplify? All of them. Surrender, right? Atmanivedanam, isn't it? Is that right? Gives his whole self to Krishna and engages in all of the 9 items of devotional service. So what's the first thing that he does in the description? Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo. He always thinks of Krishna, right? Then what does he do? Karo Harer Mandira. He goes to the temple. Right? He's the exemplar. And then when he gets to the temple, what does he do? Sit down and have a kirtan? Maybe, but that's not what's described. Karo Hare Mandira Marjana Dishu. When he gets to the temple, he cleans. So this is Sokcham, cleanliness. That's our culture. Prabhupada mentioned that he wanted our society to be exemplary and to be outstanding in terms of cleanliness. Right? Which is an issue for us now because we're opening up the kitchen. We've let our standards drop actually in the temple, which is not a good admission, but we have. When I joined a temple, you would never dream of not having a shower and putting on clean clothes before going into the kitchen, because the kitchen is actually an extension of the deity room. Right? It's not a place that we just go there, some people just go into the kitchen and they're just walking around to see what's been cooked. Right? They're just thinking, what's for dinner? And in one sense, that's not unreasonable because that's what we do. We distribute so much prasadam. Right? And if the prasadam's good, then you think, that was good. And you feel purified. So it's natural to think, what's for breakfast? Huh? Natural to think like that. But the right meditation is actually not to think of what Krishna's having for breakfast. I'm just thinking about what Krishna's having for breakfast. Huh? But actually we're thinking, what am I having for breakfast? So we've got to, and that's contaminated consciousness, actually. Well, we have to be very careful. It's advanced. It's very advanced to think, what's Krishna having for breakfast? Let's make sure it's the best. Huh? I've seen that with Korma. Korma would put so much effort into a Sunday feast. And we would too. There would be a dozen devotees cooking for Krishna's pleasure. And then Korma would... there's quite a lot of intensity in cooking. Huh? There's intensity in cooking. Getting the offering ready. And cooking it with the meditation that this is for Krishna. Huh? It is not for me. We see it. The cooks will cook an offering and then they walk away with an aluminium foil stash. But actually, that's not very good. That's not a good standard. We should not be cooking and then taking it away for ourselves. The proper standard is I cook and then I offer it to Krishna and then I distribute the prasadam for everybody else. That's the standard. And in one sense, to make sure that we're on the highest level of that meditation, it's not a bad idea. Make it a rule. I cook, but I don't take it away for myself. And I don't cook it for the devotees. I cook it for Krishna. There's this kind of this misunderstanding that when I'm cooking for the devotees, then if the devotees are happy, then Krishna's happy. Well, yeah, okay, if you're cooking devotees' prasadam or whatever. But if you're cooking an offering for Krishna, you're not cooking it for the devotees, because the devotees will say, oh, I like pizza. Right? And so then you'll cook pizza. But who are you cooking for? Are you cooking for Krishna or for yourselves, that devotees, right? And so, you know, after the offering, everybody comes around. Where's the pizza? Huh? So we have to be very careful about this kind of mentalities. And it begins with cleanliness. Or shall we say the substrata or the foundational principles are in the qualities of the mode of goodness. But mode of goodness engaged in Krishna's service, so it is not just sattva, it's sudha-sattva, right? Pure. And that's exemplified by Maharaj Ambarish. When he came to the temple, he cleaned first. Again, socham. And that's our culture. And our culture of cleanliness is also deep and within the heart. And even our chanting of Hare Krishna is part of that cleansing process. Cleansing our motivations for material enjoyment, which are deeply ingrained, because we see that when the living entity is in the womb and he's suffering, he's praying, Krishna, please let me be a devotee. And everybody here wants to be a devotee. We all want to be devotees. That's why we're here. But because the material energy is so powerful and so strong, because we've been in the material world for so many lifetimes, just cultivating bad habits, we just slip back. That's why we're called conditioned souls. And we shouldn't be surprised. And it's not a disqualification of a devotee. It's actually quite normal. And we see it even in the great demigods. Even the biggest devotees sometimes will slip back into that. We see it with Lord Brahma. You know, he's our sampradaya, head of our sampradaya, right? He has some problems. Indra, Lord Indra, these are demigods. These are all the devatas, right? They're all the purest of souls, and sometimes they get a bit bewildered. So that's why one has to be very careful. Because material energy is arranged in such a way to ensure ultimately that we will become pure devotees. And then that's our process. And it's really the only way to withstand this kritchena, right? The difficulties, the struggles of material existence become satisfied. We become happy and satisfied when our kritchena is focused on serving Krishna. That's an exhilaration and a happiness that always endures. Whereas happiness, Ajahn Chakka mentioned this the other day, and I heard Prabhupada. The next day I heard Prabhupada give the example. And he was saying enjoyment in the material world is limited. It's temporary. And he gives the example of eating a rasgulla. He said, one rasgulla, oh, very nice. Two rasgullas, three rasgullas, beautiful. Four rasgullas, five. Right? I always remember the Janmashtami feast that we used to have, and there would be you know, more than 108 preparations. And you've eaten, you know, maybe 30. And in the beginning, you put lots on your plate, right? But then after a while, the devotees come around, you know, they've got the rasagullas or the sweet rice or whatever. You're already up to here. And they just show you one grain of rice. And it's like, oh, no, no. Oh, no, no more. Right? We used to cook like 30 chutneys. 30 chutneys. And the prasadam hall used to be over here, which is going to return. And in the bay window, for about a month after Janmashtami, maybe not a month, I'm probably exaggerating, but at least a week or two, there'd be 30 chutney containers, you know, little plastic containers. And so breakfast, lunch, you'd be eating all the different chutneys that we'd cooked. But material enjoyment is limited. You can, whereas spiritual enjoyment, this is why spiritual enjoyment conquers even the suffering of material existence. What is it? Kleshagni. Shubhada Kleshagni, right? It burns up the struggle, the difficulties. It invokes auspiciousness and it destroys the sufferings of material existence. And so that's why getting the consciousness right, cleansing citta dapana marjanam, cleansing the heart of those material motivations, and just doing everything for Krishna's pleasure alone. That's it, right? We do everything for Krishna's pleasure, then we'll enjoy unlimited happiness on the spiritual platform, which is never ending and always fresh, right? That spiritual, the enjoyment on the material platform is limited, but the enjoyment on the spiritual platform is always unlimited and always fresh. Right? That's the kind of enjoyment that we're looking for, that can overcome the difficulties, but it needs to be purely motivated. And the material world is designed in such a way to, you know, put the screws on. And then we realize, oh, that's not the... It's wrong. That's not where pleasure exists. It's in the material world, it's always going to be, the, you know, up and down, all over the place. But the real pleasure comes from, actually, from serving, from doing these things. Cleansing. And that's why you see, in the spiritual world, what are the queens of Vrindavan, the queens of Dwarka are always cleaning, even though the place is not dirty. Spiritual world is, these activities are performed, even though it doesn't, because they're the source of great satisfaction and bliss, actually, engaging in these activities. We think, oh no, I've got to clean the hallway again. I remember when I joined the temple, I had to clean the prasadam hall. That was one of my services. Going into the kitchen, dividing breakfast, washing all of the pots. And the thing I really hated the most, or not hated, I didn't hate, the thing that I looked least forward to was the kitchen cleanup. Right? Because it was 3 hours of, 2 or 3 hours of hard work. And the 9 o'clock cook would always tell you, hey, Prabhu, come on. And, you know, I'm a brahmana, I'm senior to you, and you do what I tell you to do. Huh? I already got enough service to do, Prabhu. The first time that I did the kitchen cleanup, I didn't finish till midnight, and I was in tears. Oh no, I've got to get up for Mogulati, and I was crying about a few other things. So I think I shaved up on that day, so I'd lost all my hair. And Chincharupa and I had been separated, so you know, I was a brahmachari and she was a brahmacharini. And so I was crying about a few things. So But what I discovered was, if you put aside the fact that it was a challenge, and you just got into it and did it, at the end, you were ecstatic. You were just in ecstasy. So very often, the things that you don't like to do, like cleaning, right? You think, oh no, I've got to clean, and I already did this yesterday. I'm going to have to do it again tomorrow. I used to look forward to seeing new people come to the temple, and I was thinking, great, I won't have to do this service anymore, and I can get that guy to do it, right? And it happens now. When new people come along, and then the devotees think, oh, great, would you like to do some service? Oh. Here you go, clean the hallway. So I was always thinking, oh, here comes a new devotee, great, I can become a Sankirtan devotee. Then what happened was I became a Sankirtan devotee, so I was now more advanced. And then I discovered that being a Sankirtan devotee was tougher than cleaning the cleaning the prasadam hall. So I was concerned then, showing a great deal of concern. Oh, I hope the prasadam hall is getting cleaned properly. So anyway, what appears to be austerity and what appears to be difficult in devotional service, and especially here we see, those difficulties that we experience are actually an impetus for us to make spiritual advancement. They're not to be avoided or to be shied away from, challenges and especially, you know, cleaning is in the mode of goodness, and that's the hardest thing to do. But it's also, it's maintenance, right? Keeping things clean is maintenance. That's Lord Vishnu's work. And it's the hardest. Building something, that's not so... Well, destroying something, that's easy, right? You go to the beach, you build a big sandcastle, fancy sandcastle, it'll take you 3 hours to build it, right? But how long does it take to smash a sandcastle? Gone. Finished. Right? 3 hours work, 30 seconds, destroyed. So destruction is easy. Creation is a little harder, but compared to maintaining, it's nothing. It's a piece of cake. So that mode of goodness, and Krishna tells us, in the beginning, the mode of goodness is like what? Poison. Right? Mode of goodness is like poison in the beginning and amrita in the end, right? Mode of ignorance is just ignorance in the beginning and ignorance in the end, right? Poison in the beginning and poison in the end. There's drinking alcohol, right? Oh, I had a great time last night. I can't remember anything I did. But this is mode of ignorance, enjoyment. We had a great time. Oh, what did you do? Oh, I don't know. I can't remember. It was good, though. Got in a fight. Got bashed up. Or whatever. So many things. Mode of ignorance. Mode of passion is nectar in the beginning, suffering in the end. Mode of goodness is difficult in the beginning, ambrosial in the end. So these, you know, the and that's tapa, that's austerity. But it's Lord Vishnu's work. And doing that, and you know, especially in India, devotion is measured by how consistent and by how regulated and by how constant your rendering of service is. Right? Not that we'd be a flash in the pan, big devotee, and then go away, but rather a little devotee who just keeps doing their service. Steady, steady, steady. Right? Even if it's only a little apparently insignificant service, like cleaning the courtyard, for example. Right? Just a humble service. But to keep do that every day, day in, day out, keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. Because there's the understanding. It's not the service or the external manifestation of the service, but it is what's going on in the heart that demonstrates the bhakti of the bhakta, right? Just keep on doing the same steady service day in, day out. Whether you're being praised or whether you're being criticized, just keep doing the service. Respected or not, right? You know, some days people say, oh, Prabhu, you're such a wonderful devotee, right? Then on other days they'll say, what are you doing, you idiot? So, what is it? Sukutuka same kritva jaya jayo labha labho, right? Which means whether you're in happiness or distress, and it'll come and go, right? Victory or defeat, gain or loss. Whether we're being praised or criticized, a devotee will keep doing the little services. And the little services for us, actually big, you know, any service to Krishna is big, even if it's little. And as Prabhupada pointed out, the person cleaning the courtyard is the same as the devotee dressing and you know, serving on the altar. It's actually the same. In essence, it's the same. The devotee who's cleaning the courtyard is no further away than those who are intimately associated with the deity. They're just as close, they're just as dear to Krishna. So with that right mood or the right mentality of service, then even difficult things become very easy. Huh? What's that? There's that verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. No, I can't remember the Sanskrit. But Krishna Das Kaviraj mentions, if we are able to remember Lord Chaitanya, then even the most difficult things become easy. But if we forget Krishna, then even, you know, the littlest thing can almost be impossible. Have you ever experienced that? The littlest things, if you're not Krishna conscious, the littlest things, oh, I've got to clean the hallway. Oh, no, too hard. Right? Too hard. I can't do it. I don't want to do it. I can't do it means I don't want to do it. My mind hurts. But if we're Krishna conscious, then even the most difficult thing is a challenge, yes, but we embrace it enthusiastically and become ecstatic, even despite the difficulty. Okay, anybody have any comments or questions? Yes. Akshay. Yeah, well, the Bhagavatam, I think that's the theme of the Bhagavatam at the moment. Caesarean section, you didn't suffer enough. Usually they do that because he suffered too much and it's time to get him out quickly because he's going to die. And here it's mentioned here, you know, that birth is so intense that sometimes children die. Huh? It's not birth, it's death. Birth and death. Huh? Double whammy. Back again for another go round. Yeah. Caesarean section is generally used when there's what do they call it? Fetal distress. And so many things. Anybody? A midwife here? Midwife. Midwife means somebody who helps. Helps deliver babies. Their expertise is in helping mothers give birth. That's why there's concern about, say, a home delivery. Because if the child is born and there's some complications, or you know, won't come out, or is not coming out properly, we have to get him out by other means. But there's, even in that situation, there's a fair amount of suffering, I think. We shouldn't look down on those who are born by cesarean section and say, you haven't suffered enough. You haven't suffered enough. Let me help you. Let me assist you in your spiritual advancement. I'll help you. I'll help make spiritual progress. Is that okay? Oh, yes, Prabhu. Please accept my humble obeisances. What are you picking on me for? Anything else? Bhakti.
I find that when I'm cleaning, it's a good time. I take the opportunity to do gratitude and thanks for
gratitude.
Gratitude.
Yeah, that's... I always felt that I had to get all the dirt out. Because Krishna's watching, you know, he can see where the dirt is. And if I can see it, he can see it too. And if I leave it, then I'm not... Krishna's not going to be happy if there's still some dirt lying around. But yeah, gratitude, yeah, why not? Can we have a meditation? Anything else? Somebody else had their hand up? Yes, Babuji.
I'm just wondering how we need to offer Krishna, not to, when we're cooking, we have to cooking for Krishna, not for devotees. That's the main thing, right?
You can be cooking for the devotees. There's cooking for the devotees and cooking for the deities. Cooking for the deities is not cooking for the devotees. A subtle difference. Right? Subtle difference, but we're not. We're cooking for the deities. So they only need a certain amount, and usually we cook things that Prabhupada recommended we cook for the deities. There's... Yeah, prasadam.
So something of prasadam can be too fancy.
Yeah, so then we don't overeat. So there's an art in eating prasadam. And we have the propensity, we have the enjoying propensity, right? And one of the ways that the devotees can enjoy is through prasad, right? And so we can enjoy a variety of tasty prasad, but don't overeat, right? So we eat on a regular basis, and we can have simple prasadam to sustain ourselves, but there's nothing wrong with having some maha prasadam that's also tasty, so that we can exercise the tongue. The tongue, sarira avidya jal, the body is ignorance, right? Judendriya tahikau, and the tongue is the most difficult to control, right? It's talking all the time and it likes to eat nice things. So we engage the tongue rather than deny it. You know, many times I saw the devotees will come to breakfast with just a little bowl, right? And then they pack it up. So have a reasonable sized plate and put enough on it. And especially, you know, you're a young man, relatively, right? So you'll like to eat. Anybody here who doesn't like to eat? Who doesn't like to eat? The evidence tells us otherwise. So Prabhupada encourages eat sumptuously, work hard. Right? Not eat sumptuously. You know, when it's time to do some service or clean the temple or whatever, oh Prabhu, I'm too tired. Right? Prabhupada quotes, there's a Bengali thing that he said, what is it? I can't remember the first part of it. The last part of it is, it's about being enthusiastic to eat, but being melancholy. He's talking about Hanuman, or being a monkey, basically. And, you know, eating enthusiastically, but when it comes time to jumping to Lanka, melancholy, not very enthusiastic, right? So we're enthusiastic about eating. When it's time to do some service, oh, Prabhu, I need to take a bit of rest. But that's okay, actually. That's also okay. Because, you know, here's what will happen. You'll get up early in the morning, 4 o'clock, go to the whole program, and you'll be hungry, right? And then you'll take prasadam. And then have a guess what's going to happen after that. Yeah. But you might also feel tired, right? You've already been up from 4 till 9, 5 hours without having eaten anything, right? Got up early, you'll have something to eat, and then have a guess what? If you feel tired, that's normal. That's what I discovered anyway. It's normal. So have a rest. But not, you know, have a 15-minute snap. Because it's normal. I know I used to go to the morning program, full morning program, take prasadam, and then sit down and read the Bhagavad Gita. Right? So what happens when you do that and you read the Bhagavad Gita? Anyway, what happened? Then try read the Bhagavad Gita and nothing makes sense. So have a rest. Understand your limitations. It's not unusual if you've been up for 5 hours and you've just eaten some, you know, puri, halva, sabji. The ghee gets in your blood and it clogs the system up. Slows everything down, right? So, but then plan around it. Okay, I need a rest. Then have a shower, freshen up, and then do some reading or go and do some service. But it's quite normal. We used to drive out on Sankirtan, it would just be a struggle to stay awake to get to where you're going. I experienced it myself, where you get on the tram or the train, right, and then you wake up 3 stops after where you're supposed to get off. Because you're tired. It's just, even we're devotees, we can't disobey the laws of physics. Huh? Generally speaking. Unless we're paramahamsas like, Raghunath Das. Raghunath Das could survive on 6 drops of buttermilk every second day. because his energy was coming purely from the spiritual platform, right? But we're not. So in the Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami and Prabhupada explains how the tongue, the belly and the genitals are in a straight line. And so the key to controlling all of those three is by, first of all, controlling the tongue. We chant Hare Krishna. We describe the glories of Krishna. So that's how we engage the tongue. And also through eating, because it has a dual purpose. And in eating, we take regulated prasadam. It can be a variety of prasadam so that our sensual propensities are engaged. But we shouldn't overeat. Right? It's nice to take a little bit of mahaprasadam because it's enjoyable, obviously. But don't overeat. Otherwise, that snap will be longer than 20 minutes. It'll be onco blanco, tamagoon, right? So it's regulated, means we have a regulated program and we can take a variety of prasadam to satisfy that propensity. Otherwise, what will happen is if you just try to eat very simple, right? Then when, you know, you'll become agitated, annoyed, even the littlest thing will disturb you. And when you are presented with an opportunity to take some, you'll just overeat, right? So that's the trick, is eat regularly, but take just a little as required, you know, so we don't overeat. Then there's no pressure on the belly's not too full, and there's no pressure on our genitals. It's again physics. Huh? So don't deny yourself mahaprasadam. Right? Anybody have that problem? All right. On that point, let's go and have some prasadam. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhakta Brinda ki jai.